than the clothes we wear. Style is about the way we move through the world. On this episode of Beyond Style Matters, I talk to Indigenous artist and fashion designer, Sage Paul. She's passion personified, a young Indigenous artist and fashion designer who's adamant about making her voice heard and raising awareness of the talent and artistry in Indigenous communities throughout Canada. Toronto-born Sage Paul, a proud member of English River First Nation, was instilled with a love of craft from a very young age and went on to study fashion formally and pursue her own fashion dreams. But lately, there's more on Sage's plate than merely her own work. In recent years, Sage has become one of this country's most beloved spokespeople for Indigenous creativity. And having founded Indigenous Fashion Week Toronto, she helps provide a welcome platform for a wide array of artistic creators and sartorial storytellers who remind us of their rich cultural heritage via their spellbinding work. I spoke with Sage Paul, who's currently busy at work on a film project, about her roots, her vision, and her hopes for Indigenous artists and designers going forward. Sage Paul, welcome to this episode of Beyond Style Matters. I'm so happy that you've joined us. I've had so much respect for you for such a long time, even though you're a pretty young kid compared to me. But for the first time I met you, you have such a great story to tell, and you represent so many important things, especially at this time.
Where did you grow up? I grew up in Toronto. I was born and raised here. Okay. And then I spent my childhood at Gabriel Dumont, which is it's like native city housing. So I was very much raised around my culture and people in the community, although it was mostly Anishinaabe, not Dene Suthlane, which I'm Dene, but it was so awesome to be able to grow up surrounded by that. And of course, I grew up watching fashion television. It was like the access that I had. We had like city TV. Like, we only had a few channels. So fashion television was huge in my life.
But, and what about your whole passion for making things and being such a creator? How did that start?
My family and the community that I grew up surrounded by, very creative family and resourceful. So there's the one aspect where there's just the creativity and the stories that have been shared with me through like my dad and my mom and our family members that are more like traditional stories that you would find in any kind of culture, but also like resourceful. You know, we grew up with not very much. So making clothing also became a part where if I wanted new clothes, I had to make it because we couldn't just run to the store and buy whatever I wanted. So it was definitely a balance between those two worlds.
Not to sound like a cliche, but when I think of it, the Indigenous culture and the incredible respect that there is and that Indigenous people themselves have really garnered for the level of craftsmanship proficiency that they're capable of. Was that something that you were aware of like early on? Like, did you have a grandmother that did that kind of sewing?
I was never really, I never saw it as being different from like fashion. I think I was just raised in it. And now that I'm seeing the comparisons, especially with fast fashion coming in, like we don't see this quality of work and craftsmanship in the fashion industry. But I grew up with family, like my grandmother had passed it on to my aunties and like all of the aunties who were in Gabriel Dumont, who I got to learn from. So we would sit down and get to work with them and learn how to do the bead work. And my mom and dad had lots of materials around, so I would always just practice. And so it was just an important part of, you know, my parents just wanted me to make sure that I knew where I came from. And sewing and bead work was a huge part of that. I kind of went towards the sewing. I just really loved making clothing. My sister is just a phenomenal bead artist, and she learned from my auntie. And when she's sitting there learning from my auntie. You know, she was like 16 years old and she was like, oh, I don't want to be here. You know, she was a typical teenager and she wanted, but my auntie was like, nope, sit here and we're going to bead. And it takes a long time, you know, to figure it out. But like, that's the role of aunties and grandmas, is to just get us to sit there and learn those crafts.
And how grateful we are afterwards. Yeah. So many years later when we realize, I mean, I see that from my own daughters and the crafts that my mom taught them when they were just little. And you think that, you know, you get to a certain age, you forget about it, but somehow it comes back to you in your life.
It does. It's so amazing. I feel like I had a huge break from working on anything fashion or creating, and you know, especially when you go through those teen years where you're just trying to find yourself and you're resisting everything that your parents have worked so hard to teach you and show you. And then it just makes that full circle. And I just love it because now my parents are getting older, and I just feel like a sense of pride when I get to show my mom and my dad what I'm learning. And hey, mom, look, I'm doing hide tanning. Or dad, look, I'm gonna make this scarf with grandma's like beadwork on it, and I'm learning Dene and get to put Dene words on there. So it just, I think there's a lot of hope and happiness about us carrying on those traditions.
Every great conversation needs a pause, so this is the perfect time to talk to you about our sponsor, TSC, who, without their support, this podcast wouldn't be possible. Now, as you might know, I've covered the catwalks of Paris, Milan, New York, and London. And so you might ask, why have I partnered with a retailer like TSC, today's shopping choice? Well, I believe great fashion should be accessible to everyone. And TSC.ca is home to some amazing designers, wonderful Canadians like Brian Bailey, Kim Newport-Mimran of Pink Tartan fame, and Hillary McMillan, as well as quality brands like Lamarck and Ron White Shoes. It's one-stop shopping for everything you need to make your own style statement. And of course, TSC offers so much more than mere fashion. Shop TSC.ca and discover some great brands at some great prices.
When did you decide that you were really going to study fashion formally and pursue it as a career?
I actually didn't know what I wanted to do out of high school. So I was like, I guess I'll do fashion. So it was more of a, I felt like I, you know, it's time to go to college. So I guess I'll choose fashion. And, you know, it was really difficult to see myself in the industry. So I ended up working in the Indigenous arts community for over a decade. And it was there when I worked at the Indigenous Film Festival. It's called Imaginative, the Imaginative Film and Media Arts Festival, is where I saw Indigenous people who grew up in the city and were traveling and wanted to use the like film as a medium to tell our traditional stories. And that's where I was like, hey, I can do fashion. Just because I want to do fashion doesn't mean I have to, you know, go do an internship and do it the way that typical Western fashion does it. It's like, I can do what I was taught from my mom, from my dad, from my aunties, and which was very recent. I would say like in the early 20s, like the teens of the 2000s. Yeah.
You obviously have, a great respect for the craft and the technique of creativity in fashion. But it seems that there really is something more of fashion in Indigenous culture, and maybe really in every culture, has the potential to really tell stories and really almost become a kind of conduit for change and political change, perhaps. Tell me how you feel about that and the power of fashion to be more than just beautiful things that we wear.
Oh my gosh, it's such a powerful medium. And oh, there's so much I want to share about this. That's such a great question. It definitely is can be very political. And so that pushed me back to research even just the word fashion. I'm like, where does the word fashion come from? And, you know, people have such specific ideas of what fashion is. When you tell someone who doesn't work in fashion what fashion is, they're like, oh no, I don't know anything about fashion. But they actually put on clothes every single day. They are like, they are a part of the fashion industry, whether or not they like it, though, in, you know, not in ways that we see at the, you know, the big runway shows and stuff like that. So looking at fashion, the word fashion, it goes back to Eastern Europe, and that's when capitalism was being born, and there was the kings and the queens and the monarchies that were had these lavish like clothing that were like basically marketed to the poor people, and then that was like this cycle, and then it expanded beyond the world. And so it was that capitalism that from what I read that I saw is like how this word of fashion really practice of fashion has really dominated our understanding of what fashion is. But then in other cultures around the world, like everyone's been dressing ourselves. Adornment is a huge part of every single culture, whether it's Eastern Europe or it's Northern Canada or Africa, wherever, right? So it really is, every culture does have that fashion and the adornment. And I do love researching the various materials that are being used. And then also looking at the materials that have been introduced through trade or through colonization, and how all of the cultures adapt those materials. Because with the beaded floral work that we see so much right now within the indigenous communities, before that, we were using things like seeds and quills that were dyed in various ways, but the glass beads came in through trade and colonization. So it's so interesting when we look at that history of fashion and what that means for our cultures. And then politically, that power that fashion can have, there is the Orange Shirt Day, which is to acknowledge and commemorate and give honor and respect to the survivors of the Indian residential school system. And that color is worn every day. It was in September for young children wear those shirts today. And then we had that huge atrocity of the mass grave that was just uncovered. And orange has become such a powerful color now that represents that crime that was just uncovered. And now we see a lot of Indigenous people who are incorporating that color into their clothing. And a lot of people are looking for that because they want to support the cause. Now, of course, that's when things get kind of tricky, because that's capitalism and making the money off, like profiting off of an issue. So it's really important then when buying items that are especially politically charged or have really important meaning connected to them, of knowing where you're purchasing from. So I've been thinking about this, and I'm like, I'm going to make these orange scarves, and I've used my dad's artwork and I've used my grandma's beadwork, and I'm making it orange, but I'm giving all the profits to my dad. He's a residential school survivor. And so that's why it's just like, that seems like the best for me, where I'm like, there's so many organizations out there that can support it. But it's so just about being transparent about, you know, if we're going to be profiting off of especially political movements or issues, that we put our money back into where it should be going to.
Absolutely. Well, there's no question that the passion is going to and has already given birth to so much of your creative drive. I mean, and especially as you say, growing up with a dad who's a residential school survivor. I don't know if he told a lot of stories, if he talked about his experiences and if you understood as a kid, you know, what that meant, but to come from a survivor father of that nature, you know, that does something to you, just the way you see the world, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He didn't speak much about it. And as an adult, I definitely see a lot of things that how that has impacted our lives and who we are as, you know, me and my siblings and why we are where we are today. But I'd say that all of us are doing quite well, gratefully. And I think it's because we have a dad who is so resilient, and, you know, our mom is very supportive of where we come from as well. So, you know, as hard as it is, and it has been a really, really difficult week for me. You know, it's really hard to talk about. I feel like I'm just kind of tiptoeing around saying specific words because it has been really, really difficult. But there is that resilience that comes in, and knowing that we have that strength to push through.
Yeah. Having followed the fashion scene for as long as I have, I've certainly kind of seen it all, and seen periods in fashion of shows and collections in fashion where the work of Indigenous people exploited, the whole misappropriation of Indigenous art and story. And I sadly tell you, like at the time, sometime I didn't even realize how horrible that was. It was just like, oh, isn't that cute the way they're, you know, John Galliano incorporated feathers into that, you know, Dior collection of the, you know, and the moccasins, they were good. And now realizing, I mean, there's been this incredible awareness that really has manifested itself. Thank God, thank God. And I know that so many people now are doing their bit to make sure that everybody understands just what this is all about. Yeah. It seems almost recently, it hasn't been that long that we've had this new awareness. So what an exquisite spot, in a sense, for you to be in as an Indigenous artist that really has such a strong point of view, such a heightened awareness and perception of artistry in your community and the incredible power that it holds, and in a position where you do have a voice now, Sage, that you've worked for. I mean, yeah, I'm sure, I don't know if it was always like that, but yeah, you had great cred for me. The minute I met you, I knew that, well, listen to this woman, she has something to say. So I'm thinking it's almost like a, I don't know if you feel like it's a responsibility that you have now, or how do you find being an Indigenous artist at this particular point in time?
I think about it every day, because there was a time where I was like, I'm just doing my thing and I can explore this or that. And, you know, I am in a position of leadership now. I do have this platform, so I do have a responsibility, especially when I'm talking about Indigenous made work. And, you know, it's not that I'm speaking for people, but I am trying to create space for more voices to be heard. And I need to make sure not to speak incorrectly. And there has been times when I have made mistakes and I have to go, okay, this was wrong and I shouldn't have done this, or I shouldn't have done that, because Indigenous people, our communities are so different across the board. And when it comes to appropriation, there's even appropriation amongst Indigenous nations. And so there is the importance of making sure representation, especially for a platform like Indigenous Fashion Week Toronto, where, you know, we want to have a very broad representation of Indigenous people, not only our cultures, but also our bodies, our gender expression, all these things that are so important. And we have to make sure to put in the, I guess, policies. I hate that word, policies, but, you know, we have to make sure that we are actually addressing them in ways and being accountable to any mistakes that we have as we go through and navigate this new platform. It's so new. And we are coming out of a place, like you said, with appropriation, where it feels like, hey, we just want to do everything and anything. And it's easy to get caught into this kind of trans indigeneity. And so it's really important for us that we are responsible to accurate representation of various Indigenous nations across the board, across around the world, really, and make sure that I am speaking correctly about them. So I have to do my research. So my job does involve a lot of research. And every time I make a mistake, I'm like, oh my gosh. And I really, I'm just like, hey, I'm not doing my research well enough. I have to do that better. I have to speak with these people more and just make sure that I'm doing the right job, because then, you know, especially when I get to speak with someone like you, who I admire so much and I've looked up to like my entire life, it's so awesome. But then I know, like, your audiences, you know, are not necessarily going to be Indigenous people, and then they're hearing my voice for the first time. And so, like, sometimes I can be that first point of entry into understanding the world of Indigenous made fashion, craft, and design. It's kind of where I'm at.
You tread a very interesting kind of path now, because initially, you were an aspiring fashion designer, you know, young Canadian talent with a lot of creativity and drive and inspiration. And then all of a sudden, as a member of the Indigenous community who has this responsibility to really explain things to everybody and make the path maybe a little smoother for some people. I mean, you're helping so many people in what you're doing as well. How do you, you know, do both those things? How do you wear both those hats and keep yourself happy as a creative person?
It's so hard. It is. And I really have made my priority Indigenous Fashion Week Toronto right now, because I think back to when I was finishing fashion school, if there had been an Indigenous Fashion Week where I had the opportunity to potentially show at, like, that could have been life-changing for me. So I really think it's important that I continue to grow this platform, and, you know, when I'm ready to continue on my journey, that I know that it will continue to live. And we'll be here for, you know, if my little niece, who's 3 years old right now, you know, when she's 16 years old and wants to decide she wants to do fashion, if she does, maybe she does, that she will have that spot to do that work. Yeah, finding creativity is hard. I do pick up a couple costume design projects that I feel really committed to and that I really love the story, because I think also as someone who is creating these spaces for designers, even though I'm not doing the work as much as I used to, that I still understand the craft and the practice and the needs of the designers. So I don't want to be walking and being like, they need more marketing, and actually they don't need it at all. I just think it's so, so important to do that. So it gives me hope knowing that this space is so important. It has that kind of impact. And so I try to balance, back to your question about balancing, I do my best to balance, but at times I do sway on what I'm prioritizing.
Sustainability is such a big conversation in fashion today on all kinds of levels, from, you know, the smallest kind of makers to the biggest fashion conglomerates, and everyone's concerned about this. We have to be, you know, for the sake of the planet. But it's something that's been so inherent in Indigenous artistry and Indigenous fashion, really from the beginning. It was all about that. It was all about the relationship to the land that gave birth to all these beautiful creations. Can you talk a bit about that and how sustainability is playing maybe even a greater role, if that was possible, in Indigenous hearts and minds?
Yeah, well, like you said, it's always been there, part of the work that we're creating, and it involves the entire community. So like my uncle or my cousins hunt a moose, and they know that they're going to have the skin, so we make the leather from it, and we don't waste any part of the animal. And then, of course, there's like actually using materials from the land for weaving and for dyeing, although it is very laborious. And I understand that accessibility is, I mean, like when we're talking about the larger fashion industry as an industry, it can be very challenging to look at how to make a sustainable business. So I feel like that is now something that is being looked at, because a lot of designers in the Indigenous communities around the world are selling beautiful works that are like, everything is sustainable, but the prices are very, very high. And I mean, it really is like the evolution of couture. Well, I don't know, it's always been here, so I don't know if it's evolution, but I think for the industry, it really feels like an evolution to that kind of couture work, and bringing back that idea and understanding of couture, because people call things couture and it's not really couture. And it's like, so, you know, but it's like bringing back that couture, bringing back this idea of luxury and heirloom and heritage pieces, that, and shifting the consumer's understanding of why things would cost so much. And I see most designers I work with in the community are aware of sustainability and are concerned about working with local manufacturers or local hunters, and where their fur is coming from. Fur and leather are always the big one, but just making sure that we know where everything comes from. Mm-hmm. The internet has provided a platform to provide information and knowledge to consumers about where that all comes from.
Where do you see Indigenous fashion going, especially out of Canada? And Canadians, you know, have such a glorious Indigenous kind of history, and so many wonderful, wonderful people right across the land who have so much talent to offer.
Oh my gosh, I just see it growing. And Indigenous Fashion Week Toronto, we're going through a brand rebranding, but that will be released soon. But the reason why I'm saying this is because we do more than just the Fashion Week. We do act as an incubator, and we act as we provide opportunities that help to foster Indigenous designers. We're primarily focused on Canada right now, but it would be nice to broaden that to allow for some exchange between Indigenous designers from around the world. But I think it's really important to foster Indigenous designers to understand the larger fashion industry and those business, the way that it operates, so that we can continue to be an important part of the industry, of this economy that we are all a part of. So we do make sure to do that. Although with that training and those resources that we provide, we do also provide training around values-based entrepreneurship to make sure that designers are not entering into a relationship with, I don't know who, anyway, with some mainstream fashion brand, right? And they walk in there and they are like, just, it's like a David and Goliath kind of situation. And we don't want that to happen to designers. We don't want designers to feel like they have to change everything who they are. And, you know, some artists and designers are just happy with where they're at too. Like some designers are like, no, I sell enough online and this is all I need. Right? There's not this, also there's not this idea of like just more, you know, in terms of getting the money. And
yeah, that has certainly been one of the blessings of the internet and being able to sell, you know, directly to customers online. If you have your own business, I'm seeing so many beautiful designers now doing that. And they don't care that much about the fame and the fortune. I mean, it's a different set of values, even when I was a kid or when I, you know, growing up and you know, it was all, everyone just sort of wanted to be rich and famous. It's not really about that anymore. You know, it's you want to be able to tell your story, but not for the purpose of fame or fortune.
I know young people. Oh, I'm just so impressed by young people today and just seeing how they are all working with each other. And I think that's why we have these really big, hard conversations around our culture and racism and gender and identity and body representation. All of these conversations, I believe, are happening because of these young people who are just not accepting it anymore. And, I think it's just changing everything across the board.
I would think with so many young people, especially, you know, young Indigenous people really going through tough stuff, like really tough stuff in so many remote communities. And it's just, you know, gut-wrenching to think of the suicide rates and and so many of them looking for direction and how this kind of artistic expression could really maybe help them. Is that something else that you're working on, Sage, trying to reach, you know, young people in different communities and trying to get artists or designers to perhaps work with them?
Yeah, we do have most of the designers we work with, they're on reserve. It's important to me to foster those relationships. I don't know if it's exactly going in and doing like a workshop or something with young people, but I think how do we foster our communities to continue those practices? Like how we were talking about how I learned from my auntie, my sister learned from my auntie and she made her sit there. Like, so how are we encouraging just those family dynamics to happen in communities? And I do hope that by having this platform and all of the aunties and young people, there's a lot of really young people who we present, that does create a jumping off point for that to go back to the communities. That's where it lies, is that like we have responsibilities to each of our own communities. And there is a lot of work that I hope proliferates beyond my own community. I'm from English River First Nation and I like to go back and, you know, and I stay in touch with my family to really help kind of encourage like what are the possibilities. So I do hope a lot of other young Indigenous people and aunties and grandmas are doing that in their own communities. And we definitely all do have a responsibility to do that.
Well, you're definitely a beacon of light, Sage, everything that you stand for and everything that you've really been able to turn us onto in the few years that you've really been on the scene. You've made quite an impact, and I'm sure we'll continue to do so. Any real hopes and dreams for yourself at this point in time? I know you're involved in so many different projects.
My hopes are just to continue to see younger people and be excited and motivated and see that there is a place for them. So that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, sounds like you're in a pretty good place right about now, and continued success. And anything I can personally ever do for you and the community, I'm there for you. I so believe in you. Thank you so much, Sage Paul, for being on this episode of Beyond Style Matters.
Thanks for listening. To see video versions of the podcasts, check out tsc.ca/stylematters. Till next time, I'm Jeannie Becker.